Lieber ein alter Dämon als ein junger Gott. Eine Leseperformance von und mit John Giorno.
Junger Gott muss so gewesen sein. Wer als 75-Jähriger noch aussieht wie ein fleischgewordenes Cäsarenstandbild, der muss einst ein junger Gott gewesen sein.
I can't believe I'm 75, but it's why not?
Diese Stimme gehört John Giorno, geboren im Dezember 1936, Jurist, Muse, praktizierender Buddhist, multimedialer Allesversucher, Dichter, Dämon.
Well, demons are you create in your own mind, and I mean people think they're outside, but they're just in your mind. So that I like to work with them because they're interesting subjects.
John Giorno zog es als Teenager bereits in die große Stadt, nach New York. Das Studium der Rechte war bald Nebensache.
Aus einem Zufall heraus schienen alle meine Freunde irgendwie Künstler zu sein. Andy Warhol, Robert Rauschenberg, Jasper Johns, die Pop-Art-Leute eben. Heute gehen einem die Namen leicht von der Zunge, aber 1961 kannte die keiner. 1961 hatte Andy noch keine einzige Ausstellung gemacht und Jasper und Bob, denen reichte 2 Jahre vorher oft das Geld nicht für ein warmes Essen.
Bob, Jasper, Andy, aus Freunden wurden Liebhaber, aus Liebhabern wurden Weltstars.
Pop art happened in the 60s and it transformed the world in this profound sense. You cannot in 2012 or whatever year from then to now, you cannot do anything without having dealt with that reverberation.
Als Andy und ich zusammen waren, konnte ich am frühen Abend begutachten, was er tagsüber gemacht hat. Nach gut 1,5 Jahren dachte ich mir schließlich, was der mit seinen fertig vorgefundenen Materialien kann, das sollte ich doch mit Worten fertigbringen.
In der geahnten Tradition von Dos Passos, Ezra Pound oder T.S. Eliot, in der gefühlten Nähe zu den Beat Poets um Allen Ginsberg, die zu Beginn der 60er Jahre zwischen den USA, Paris und Marokko pendelten, zwischen Rauschgift und Radikalisierung, zwischen Popularität und selbstgewählter Absonderlichkeit, in der kreativ also höchst aufgeladenen Downtown-Szene Manhattans um 1964, versuchte sich John Giorno als Wortverdreher, als Monteur von Inhalten, kurz als zeitgenössischer Dichter.
What I do when I write is I say these words as I'm writing them. You know, like words come in phrases or thoughts, and I work on them from the very first second, what they sound like. And there are these natural rhythms that you don't have to put there. They're there naturally. And then as one performs it, and I rehearse as I write a poem. So I build the sound part of it as I'm building the content part of it, you know?
Auch aus den Dichterfreunden wurden Liebhaber, erst Brian Gysin, später William S. Burroughs.
The best thing about William is he's one of the most brilliant people I ever met. His mind was so brilliant. His mind was much more brilliant than anything in his books. I mean, because we lived on a daily basis. Every night we had dinner together and would smoke a number of joints and drink vodka. And in that period, for William, joints and vodka made his mind flower in a way that was so many of the brilliant things that night would get into the books because he would next morning continue working on whatever he was working on. But not all of it did.
Burroughs also, brillant, weil befeuert von einem Joint und ein paar Wodkas, bespricht sich Abend für Abend mit John Giorno. Hier wird es Zeit, dass wir John Giorno erstmals länger zuhören. Er performt für uns gleich einen zweiteiligen Auszug aus einem Text, der den Tod von Bill Burroughs beschreibt, danach die in geradezu homerischer Tradition stehende Liste mit den Dingen, die dem toten Burroughs mit in den Sarg gelegt worden sind.
The death of William Burroughs. William died on August 2nd, 1997, Saturday at 6:30 in the afternoon from complications from a massive heart attack he'd had the day before. He was 83 years old. I was with William Burroughs when he died. And it was one of the best times I ever had with him. Doing Tibetan Nyingma Buddhist meditation practice, I absorbed his consciousness into my heart. It seemed like a bright white light, blinding but muted, a gentle shooting star in my heart and up the central channel and out the top of my head to a pure field of great clarity and bliss. It was very powerful. William Burroughs, resting in great equanimity and the vast, empty expanse of primordial wisdom mind. I was staying in William's house, doing my meditation practices for him, trying to maintain the good conditions and dissolve any obstacles that might be arising for him at that very moment in the bardo. I had confidence that William had a high degree of realization, but he was not totally, not completely an enlightened being. Lazy, alcoholic, junky William. I did not allow doubt to arise in my mind even for an instant, because it would have allowed doubt to arise in William's mind. Now I had to do it for him. This is a very long piece, and I'm going to skip to another part that's called What Went Into William Burroughs' Coffin with His Dead Body. On Tuesday morning, August 6th, 1997, James Grauerholz and Ira Silverberg came to William's house to pick out the clothes for the funeral director to put on William's dead body. The clothes were in a closet in my room, and we picked out the things that would go into William's coffin and grave, accompanying him on his journey in the underworld. His favorite gun, a .38 snub-nose special, fully loaded with 5 shots. William called it the Snubby. The gun was my idea. William always said you can never be too well armed in any situation. Of his more than 80 world-class guns, he often kept it on his belt during the day and slept with it, fully loaded, on his right side under the bedsheet every night for 15 years. Gray fedora. He always wore a hat when he went out, and we wanted his consciousness to feel at ease dead. His favorite cane, a sword cane made of hickory with a light rosewood finish. Sport jacket, black with a dark green tint. We rummaged through his closet, and it was the best of his shabby clothes and smelling sweet of him. Blue jeans, the least worn ones, were the only ones clean. Jockey underwear and socks. Black shoes, the ones he wore when he performed. I thought the old brown ones that he wore every day because they were more comfortable. But James Grauerholz insisted. There's an old CIA slang that says getting a new assignment is getting new shoes. White shirt. We'd bought it in a men's shop in Beverly Hills in 1981 on the Red Night Tour. It was his best shirt. All the others had become a bit ragged. And even though it had become a bit tight, he'd lost a bit of weight, and we thought it would fit. Necktie, blue, hand-painted by William. Moroccan vest, green velvet with a gold brocade trim, given him by Brian Geisen 25 years before. In his lapel buttonhole, the rosette of the French government's Commandeur des Arts et Lettres, and the rosette of the American Academy of Arts and Letters, honors which William very much appreciated. A gold coin in his pants pocket, a gold 19th century Indian head $5 piece, symbolizing all wealth. He would have enough money to buy his way in the underworld. His eyeglasses in his outside jacket pocket. A ballpoint pen, the kind he always used. He was a writer and sometimes wrote longhand. A joint of really good grass. Junk. Just before the funeral, Grant Hart slipped a small white paper packet into William's pocket. "Nobody's gonna bust him," said Grant. William, bejeweled with all his adornments, was traveling in the underworld. I kissed him. An LP album of Us Together, 1974, was called Biting Off the Tongue of a Corpse. I kissed him on the lips, but I didn't do it. And I should have.
John Giorno, gerade zu hören als ebenso humor- wie hingebungsvoller Freund des großen Bill Burroughs, ist kein formaler oder revolutionärer Neuerer der Dichtkunst. Er ist kein Meister des wohl abgewogenen Wortes, der klanglichen oder inhaltlichen Nuance. Und doch hat John Giorno mehr für die Kunst des gesprochenen wie geschriebenen Wortes getan als so mancher hochdekorierte Poet. Er war es nämlich, der dem Gedicht überhaupt Gehör verschaffte, in einer zunehmend lauter werdenden Welt.
Alle Dichter lasen ihre Texte ohne Verstärkung. In der St. Mark's Church etwa hörte man von ihren Texten selten mehr als ein fernes Echo. Oder in der Jill Cornbley Galerie. Ich erinnere mich an eine Lesung, bei der ich mit Andy Warhol zusammen war, John Ashbery und Frank O'Hara. Es war ein brütend heißer Tag im Mai 1963. Die beiden lasen ihre Gedichte und niemand verstand ein Wort. Wir schwitzten bloß. Andy sagte, hier ist es langweilig.
Über Robert Rauschenberg bekam John Giorno früh Kontakt zum Synthesizer-Pionier Robert Moog, mit dessen Unterstützung er an multimedialen, elektrisch verstärkten Präsentationsformen für Musik, Kunst und Dichtung arbeitete. Parallel zu Warhols Exploding Plastic Inevitable, der Urmutter aller Pop-Events, attackierte Giorno alle Sinne gleichzeitig. 1969 stand ein Synthesizer auf der Bühne, wenn Giorno las, sechs Lautsprecher mit insgesamt 4500 Watt und ein Bohlegefäß, in dem reichlich LSD aufgelöst war.
Just say no to family values. On a day when you're walking down the street and you see a hearse with a coffin followed by flower cars and limos, you know the day is auspicious. Your plans are going to be successful. But on a day when you see a bride and groom and wedding party, watch out, be careful. It might be a bad sign. Just say no to family values and don't quit your day job. Drugs are sacred substances, and some drugs are very sacred substances. Please praise them for somewhat liberating the mind. Tobacco is a sacred substance to some, and even though you stopped smoking, show a little respect. Alcohol is totally great. Let us celebrate the glorious qualities of booze. And I had a good time being with you. Just do it. Just do it. Just don't not do it. Do it. Christian fundamentalists and fundamentalists in general are viruses. And they're killing us, multiplying and mutating, and they're destroying us. Now you know you gotta give strong medicine to combat a virus. Who's buying? Good acid, I'm flying, slipping and sliding, slurping and slamming, dipping and dripping and squirting inside you. Never fast forward a cum shot. Milk, milk, lemonade, round the corner where the chocolate's made. I love to see your face when you're suffering. Do it with anybody you want, whatever you want, for as long as you want, any time, any place, when it's possible. And try to be safe in a situation where you must abandon yourself beyond all concepts. Just say no to family values. We don't got to say no to family values. We never think about them. Just do it. Just make love and compassion.
John Chornos Gedicht Just Say No to Family Values, das den Slogan aus der Reagan-Ära aufnimmt, man solle einfach Nein sagen zu Drogen. Während der oft genug reaktionär gefärbten 80er Jahre sang Chornos seine Gedichte meist laut zur Begleitung einer mal mehr, mal minder prominent besetzten Rockband. Diese wurden dann auf Schallplatten veröffentlicht, die auf Chornos eigenem Label, den legendären Poetry Systems, erschienen, zusammen mit Aufnahmen der einstürzenden Neubauten des Swans, der Butthole Surfers. Frank Zappa veröffentlichte dort ebenso wie Laurie Anderson oder Debbie Harry. John Chorno hatte schon in den ausgehenden 60er Jahren erkannt, dass man mit der Form Gedicht die damals neuen Medien wie etwa die Langspielplatte wunderbar nutzen konnte. Zu Weltruhm verhalf ihm die Gedichte auf Anruf beantworte Ausstellung im Museum of Modern Art aus dem Jahr 1970, wo millionenfach angerufen worden ist. Zur selben Zeit fand John Chorno Zugang zum Buddhismus, den er bis heute praktiziert. Er legt aber Wert darauf, kein buddhistischer, sondern allerhöchstens ein schwuler Dichter zu sein. Seine Gedichte aus den 70er Jahren gelten als wunderbare Zeugnisse einer sich befreienden schwulen Community, bis AIDS kam.
HIV is the tragedy of our times. '98 was catastrophic. It was like one's life was lost. All those things, sexual liberation, all the liberations. And somehow now, 30 years have passed, and AIDS is not the same problem. I mean, one has been able to work with it, and it's changed. It hasn't gone away, but it's changed.
Ob man Chornos Gedichten auf einem Anrufbeantworter, auf Schallplatte oder versteckt in einem Glückskeks begegnet, ihre manchmal unverstellte Psychedelik, ihre oft naiv wirkende Menschenliebe, ihre häufig drastische Darstellung von Sex, ihr Schockwert genauso wie ihre Fähigkeit zur Empathie, werden den Zuhörer selten unberührt lassen. Wer einen gedruckten Einstieg in das Werk von John Chorno bevorzugt, 2008 erschien Subduing Demons in America, eine Anthologie mit Gedichten aus den Jahren 1962 bis 2007.
It doesn't get better. It doesn't get better. It doesn't get better. It doesn't get any better. It doesn't get any better than this. It doesn't get any more fabulous. And as bad as it is, it does not get any better. Stuck in a traffic jam and the scenery is beautiful, irritating gusts of boredom, and on the radio is playing. If you don't like my oceans, don't swim in my seas. You can't hurt me, 'cause storms can hurt the sky. Sugar skulls and long necklaces of rotting human skulls of police officers, lawyers, and judges. The triumph over abuse and injustice. Fat chance, ringed alarm. I could not save you. You are addicted to anger and complaining. When you got hepatitis, everything looks yellow. My anger ate the goose that laid the golden egg, thick bacon and a little something sweet. And the most surprising change is being the god of your enemy. The eagles fly below us. The illusion that makes life bearable, the illusion that makes life bearable, the illusion that makes life bearable. When you lose the illusion that makes life bearable, when you lose the illusion that makes life bearable, when you've lost whatever it is you believed or invented, were imprinted or scarred by, unthinkable loss, delusion inside delusion. Everything is delusion, including wisdom. And then there's the illusions that make life bearable, the illusions that make life bearable, the illusions that make life bearable. I'm here to do whatever is your pleasure. Empty words gone without a trace. All I had to do was get through it. All I had to do was get through it. All I had to do was get through it. You can't win, you can't lose, and you can't even quit the game. The sand is snow, a hurricane in a drop of cum. You will find your true love in the end. You will find your true love in the end. You will find your true love in the end. When you die, you will find your true mind. In the darkest night is the brightest light, clear, unlocatable wisdom emptiness.
Es wird vielleicht nicht besser, aber anders. Wir hören jetzt gleich ein episches Gedicht von Giorgiano, das zum Zeitpunkt der Aufnahme, also Mai 2012, noch unveröffentlicht war und den Titel trägt God Viracocha and the Stone Giants, eine Radio-Uraufführung. Das Gedicht ist inspiriert von indianischen Schöpfungsmythen, hat mal psychedelische, mal fabelhafte Züge und war während der Aufnahmen der einzige Text, den Giorgiano noch vom Blatt lesen musste. Alle anderen Gedichte trug er auswendig vor. Ich wollte von ihm wissen, was die Inspiration für diesen doch sehr langen, sehr epischen Text gewesen ist.
I wrote that poem, I was in Peru. Peru was the inspiration for me to write this poem. I had sort of an enormous visit to Peru a little over a year ago, where I had a book coming out in Lima and museum shows and all of that, you know, and high end, you know. And then I went on another tour. I mean, when I was invited to Cusco, and then it went into another realm. and so I got this idea to do this poem. And so there are curious things in the poem, like my describing the stone walls that are made with acid paste and blah, blah, blah. That's the way the Incans made their architecture. And, you know, when we were children, or all of us, when you look at Incan buildings, you see this seamless stone, and nobody knows how they did it. And because the Incas didn't have any writing, so there's no written record. But according to anthropologists, the only way they could have done it was making an acid paste
and the formula is long lost. So I couldn't resist putting that in the poem, since nobody in all, because they can't say that they actually did that. So it can't enter the history books because there's no proof. I couldn't resist putting it in this poem. So, and then all of the other things are, they all came to me spontaneously, you know, and I have this thing when I write poems that I don't do any research, because if you do research, you just fill your mind with the words that somebody else wrote. So my style of writing, or my technique rather, is I write these poems and then I do the research to see where I made mistakes, whatever. And then sometimes it opens the door and a little research does the whole. And then I showed it to my Spanish translator in Peru, and it everything just kept more increasing. Like for instance, you know, it's a gay poem, and I had no idea that traditionally, well, God of Viracocha in their culture is a creator god, like in my poem. So he doesn't have a father and mother. And so in their culture, he personifies the male and female principles. And in some parts of their culture, he's androgynous. And in other parts of their culture, he's a hermaphrodite. So after I finished writing this poem in a funny way, I was making it with a gay guy all along and didn't know it. So that's how this poem got written.
Das Gedicht von Gott Viracocha und den Steingiganten entstand nach einer Reise nach Peru, wo im Rahmen einer Ausstellung die Werke von John Chorno vor einiger Zeit vorgestellt wurden. Er hat dabei auch die Ruinen von Cuzco besucht und man ist sich nicht ganz sicher, wie diese Ruinen erbaut worden sind. Man vermutet, dass eine säuregetränkte Paste dazu verwendet wurde, die Steine aneinander anzupassen und zu glätten. Und das hat er in sein Gedicht hinein fantasiert bei der Schöpfung dieser Steingiganten, so wie er alle Dinge erst einmal hinein fantasiert, seine Fantasie den Spielraum lässt, den sie braucht, um eine Welt zu entwickeln. Und im Nachhinein schaut er dann nach, ob die Fakten einigermaßen passen könnten. Und zu seiner großen Überraschung ging es ihm mit Gott Viracocha so, dass angeblich dieser Inka-Gott in manchen Erzählungen androgyn war, in anderen ein Hermaphrodit war, auf jeden Fall eine starke zweigeschlechtliche Komponente hat. Und er, der ja schwule Gedichte, explizit schwule Gedichte auch schreibt, war sehr glücklich darüber, dass es mit einem Gott, der seine Vorlieben teilt, auf eine gewisse Art und Weise auch in diesem Gedicht zu tun bekommen hat.
God Viracocha and the Stone Giants. God Viracocha is one of the many gods who created this world. God Viracocha is good-looking, suntanned, medium height, almost beardless, rosy cheeks, strong brow, and an incredibly beautiful face. His eyes are a hook with a shining kindness, radiating a wonderful sexual warmth. His voice has a deep, attractive resonance. He is wearing white cloth tied around the waist with braided gold and a red mantle on his left shoulder. He can be fiercely wrathful and a nightmare, shy and deeply loving. His mind is the most incredibly brilliant and being with a great pleasure. We are in the middle floor of a three-storied palace called the Copper-Colored Mountain. I am visiting him, and we sit together on cushions covered with colorful, finely woven textiles of flowers, plants, and vegetables. In a square room with stone walls made with a special technique by the architects and builders who use a thick acid paste to soften and melt the rock surfaces, fitting the stones together seamlessly, which harden, remaining separate, perfectly joined. The walls are covered with sheets of delicately embossed gold. In high niches are bundles of treasures, ceramics of feathered anthropomorphic shapes, soundless, repetitive reed flutes and voiceless wisdom. God Viracocha tells me this story that happened a very long time ago, before our history began. God Viracocha came to Earth, which was a very beautiful place, and he was enjoying himself, surrounded by his retinue, when he saw that nobody lived here. There were no people. God Viracocha had a great idea. Make people. Create people from stone. Inspired by the soaring, majestic mountains, he made stone giants, 60 feet tall, some 50 feet tall. Their legs were black basalt from the oceanic ridges of Titanic plates. Pelvises of bluestone, oozing rust. Torsos of gray granite with sheens of quartz crystals. Arms of wrinkled sedimentary rock ribboned with color. Their heads were boulders that had rolled around since the Ice Age. Their teeth were pointed peaks sharp as knives. Eyes of sapphire with diamond pupils. God Viracocha breathed into the stones, and they came to life. When they walked, the ground trembled. When they made love, the earth shook. God Viracocha, after all the work and a job well done, was tired and exhausted and departed for one of his glorious heaven worlds to relax, take it easy, and have substance less bliss. Preoccupied by his divine activities, he occasionally, fondly remembered the stone giants on earth, sent them blessings, sometimes in the form of gold and business opportunities, sometimes in gusts of celestial wind filled with useless good things, but basically forgot about them. About 500 years later, God Viracocha went back to Earth, curious to see what was happening with the stone giants. It was a disaster. The giant stone people were always fighting, had invented all sorts of weapons, and were continuously at war with each other. Slingshots hurling boulders, throwing spears made of 50-foot oak trees, rocks tied to ropes swung in circles over their heads, released as multiple projectiles, huge bow and arrow missiles, spiked wood clubs, axes called neck breakers made of stone and tipped with copper. Horrendous, mindless violence and cruelty. Surfing lava flows from the volcanoes. The stone giants crawled around on broken limbs, screaming with pain. The earth was scorched and scarred with craters, a wasteland. God Viracocha was very depressed and started crying, sat down on the ground and cried and cried and cried, weeping big fat tears. The worst had happened. He had made a big mistake. He had given them emotions, but forgot to give them a soul, forgot to put love, wisdom, and compassion in their consciousnesses. God Viracocha stood up, put on the gold crown with the red feather headdress, and got furious. He raised his arm with the gold star-headed spear, and his mantle, sewn with feathers, burst into flames and surrounded him with fire. Strikes of lightning and thunder, earthquakes set off volcanic eruptions and nuclear explosions, melting the eternal snow and ice in the highlands. Torrential rain poured down relentlessly. A great flood rose and covered the mountaintops and destroyed the stone giants, annihilated them completely. Triumphs and disasters. Still today, you can see the remnants of the disembodied giants, broken rock thighs protruding from mountainsides, cracked torsos embedded in hills, stone bellies laying in valleys. God Viracocha can also see the future as well as the past and present. And interned in the mountains, along with the broken stone giants, are the dead of the massacres of the conquistadores, the army and the terrorism of the Shining Path, executions and epidemics, car bombs and death squads, 6 million people killed then and 70,000 people killed now. The Quechua language lost and culture destroyed. It was very depressing. The very worst was true. God Viracocha departed Earth disappointed, heartbroken, and disgusted, and went to one of his highest heavens, the palace of the Union of Great Bliss, to forget about it, and he forgot about it. But every once in a while, for a fleeting moment, he remembered the horror of the stone giants and the hell he made. God Viracocha is telling me this story. I am visiting him in the palace of the copper-colored mountain. We are drinking, smoking cigars and joints, and have coca leaves in our cheeks. Talking to him is touching him. Hearing him is the warm tenderness of his embrace. Put your arms around me, baby. Hold me tight. Put your arms around me, baby. Hold me tight. Put your arms around me, baby. Hold me tight. Warm, naked skin, huge hugs, deep kisses feel really good. Happy thank you more, please. 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 Dicks, tongues, tits, and assholes. Kissing in our heart minds, substanceless amyl nitrate, pulling free in full glory, in one taste, without concepts, without substance, formless and emptiness. Coming makes your life longer, a long life blessing as a bonus. Catch the afterglow, an eternity in bed, doing nothing, resting in perfection. I could feel in the mind of God Viracocha a subtle residue of sadness, almost imperceptible, the trace of something unresolved. Sure enough, shortly after, in a spontaneous burst of curiosity, he puts on the headdress and crown, mounts the shoulders of his golden-winged hummingbird, and goes back to earth to see what is happening. He was very surprised. It had become beautiful again. Green trees covered the mountains, forests of flowers, rivers of crystal clear water. He started laughing, laughed and laughed and laughed. It was totally wonderful, an earthly paradise. But there was nobody here, no people. God Viracocha is an artist. Besides liking to work with stone, he also likes sculpting with mud. He was taught by his father, Padmasambhava. He sat down by the lake and started playing with the soft, wet clay, working it quickly, making little figures, creating small people, splashing water on them, working the clay with his fingers, making men and women in different color clays, some skinny, some plump, some tall, some short, shaped their cheekbones, eyes, and lips. He painted on each the clothes they wear. God Viracocha lovingly made the Quechua people. God Viracocha lovingly created the ethnic diversity of the Quechua people. He held them in his hands, laughed and laughed and laughed, and put each in their own unique place of origin, and blew his breath into them. Wind of light went into each, becoming blood and bones, muscle and skin, created consciousnesses. From his heart center, radiating beams of blue light, he made their minds into a mirror of his own primordial wisdom mind. God Viracocha then went through the labor-intensive job of inventing their different languages and the qualities that suited each. He showed them which plants to eat and which were poisonous, and named the plants. Taught them to sing, make music, and poems. He explained how to recognize their local gods and spirits, build houses for them called sacred places, and how to invite the gods and spirits to come and enjoy themselves. And being pragmatic, how to appease them with blood sacrifice. God Viracocha is inherent in everything. He comes sometimes when needed, as a shaman, appearing as a crazy man in poor clothes and gives them teachings, creating chaos when there's too much complacency, making peace when there's too much disorder. Creating chaos when there's too much complacency, making peace when there's too much disorder. Creating chaos when there's too much complacency, making peace when there's too much disorder. Trying to show them the empty, true nature of mind. God Viracocha was very happy. This time he had done it perfectly, and departed in the western direction for the palace of the copper-colored mountain. A short time later, which is a long time in God world time, God Viracocha had a strong feeling about making beings from stone. He was an artist and liked working in stone. He went back to the lake and made new stone giants with all the magnificence of the old stone giants, making them more beautiful, awesome, taut strength in granite carved by glaciers. Blue stone draped with moss and mottled with lichen. He gave them all the qualities of the humans, but refined their intellectual capabilities, gave them a relaxed enjoyment of all phenomena, and high degrees of realization of the empty nature of mind. God Viracocha also knew, fortunately, that humans and the new stone giants could not successfully inhabit the same world. It was trouble. God Viracocha magically transported the new stone giants to an underground world of caves and crystal springs, an underground realm where they stay today, hibernating safely as hidden treasures, waiting their turn. When the time and conditions are right, the new stone giants will come back into this world. When they have been properly invited, have places to stay, and the auspicious circumstances created. According to recent oracles, forecasts, and the feelings of other gods, the time is right now. The new stone giants are coming. The glorious God Viracocha has visited Earth many times in many forms. When he comes here today, it is very upsetting for him, distressful and depressing. He could annihilate the old stone giants. But with great compassion, he cannot destroy the human race. Now, when you see an old woman sitting alone in the street, an old woman in poor clothes, waiting in a bus station, any public place, a desolate woman, weeping tears for the suffering created. It is God Viracocha visiting us.
God, Viracocha and the Stone Giants, ein Langgedicht des amerikanischen Dichters John Giorno, das in dieser Sendung seine mediale Uraufführung erfahren hat. Das nächste und letzte Gedicht schrieb er anlässlich seines 70. Geburtstags, Thanks for Nothing. Er wendet sich an alle Menschen, die seinen Lebensweg geteilt haben, an seine Liebhaber und Freunde, an sein Heimatland, an sein Publikum und bedankt sich für rein gar nichts, zeichnet mit den Mitteln der Negation ein Selbstporträt. Hier ist er wieder, der alte Dämon, der einst ein junger Gott war.
Thanks for nothing on my 70th birthday. I want to give my thanks to everyone for everything. And as a token of my appreciation, I want to offer back to you all my good and bad habits as magnificent, priceless jewels, wish-fulfilling gems, satisfying your every need and want. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thanks. May every drug I ever took come back and get you high. May every glass of wine and vodka I ever drank come back and make you feel really good, numbing your nerve ends, allowing the natural clarity of your mind to flow free. May all the suicides be songs of aspiration. Thanks that bad news is always true. May all the chocolate I've ever eaten come back rushing through your bloodstream and make you feel happy. Thanks for allowing me to be a poet, a noble effort doomed but the only choice. I want to thank you for your kindness and praise. Thanks for celebrating me. Thanks for the resounding applause. Thanks for taking everything for yourself and giving nothing back. You were always only self-serving. Thanks for exploiting my big ego and making me a star for your own benefit. Thanks that you never paid me. Thanks for all the sleaze. Thanks for being mean and rude and smiling at my face. I am happy that you robbed me. I am happy that you lied. I am happy that you helped me. Thanks. Grazie. Merci beaucoup. May you smoke a joint with William and spend some intimate time with his mind, more profound than any book he wrote. I give enormous thanks to all my lovers, beautiful men with brilliant minds, great artists, Bob, Jasper, Ugo. May they come here and make love to you. And may my many other lovers of totally great sex, countless lovers of boundless, fabulous sex, countless lovers of boundless, fabulous sex, countless lovers of boundless, fabulous sex. In the golden age of promiscuity, may they all come here and make love to you, if you want. May they hold you in their arms, bawling to your heart's delight, bawling to your heart's delight, bawling to your heart's delight. May all the people who are dead, Alan, Brian, Cookie, Jack, and I do not miss any of you, I don't miss any of them. No nostalgia. It was wonderful that we loved each other, but I do not want any of them back. Now, if any of you are attracted to any of them, may they come back from the dead and do whatever is your pleasure. May they multiply and be the slaves of whomever wants them, satisfying your every wish and desire. But you won't want them as masters, as their demons. May Andy come here, fall in love with you, and make each of you a superstar. Everyone can have Andy. Everyone can have Andy. Everyone can have Andy. Everyone can have an Andy. Huge hugs to my friends who betrayed me. Every friend became an enemy sooner or later. Deep kisses to my loves that failed. I am delighted you are vacuum cleaners sucking everything into your dirt bag. You are none other than a reflection of my mind. Thanks for the depression problem and feeling like suicide every day of my life. And now that I'm 75, I'm happily almost there. 20 billion years ago, in the primordial wisdom soup, beyond comprehension and indescribable, something without substance moved slightly and became something imperceptible, moved again and became invisible, moved again and became a particle, and particles moved again and became a quark, and again and became quarks, moved again and became protons and neutrons and the 12 dimensions of space. Tiny fireballs of primordial energy, bits tossed back and forth in a game of catch between particles, transmitting electromagnetic light and going really fast, 40 million times a second, where the pebble hits the water. This is where the trouble began. Something without substance became something with substance. Why did this happen? Because something substanceless had a feeling of missing out on something, not getting something when there was nothing to have. From that primordially endless potential to modern day reality, 20 billion years later, has produced me, and my stupid grasping mind has made me and you and my grasping mind. May Rinpoche and all the great Tibetan teachers who loved me come back and love you more. May they hold you in their wisdom arms, bathe you in all pervasive compassion, give you pith instructions, and may you, with the diligence of Olympic athletes, do meditation practice, and may you, with great confidence, realize the true nature of mind. America, thanks for the neglect. I did it without you. Let us celebrate poetic justice. You and I never were, never tried to do anything, and never succeeded. Thanks for introducing me to the face of the naked mind. Thanks for nothing.
Lieber ein alter Dämon als ein junger Gott. Eine Leseperformance von und mit John Giorno. Sprecher Werner Hertel. Technik Daniela Röder, Susanne Herzig, Wilfried Hauer. Textauswahl, Manuskript und Regie Karl Bruckmeier. Redaktion Herbert Kapfer. Eine Produktion des Bayerischen Rundfunks 2012.
Und zum Schluss die Gretchenfrage: Haben Sie Angst vorm Sterben?
Well, I'm a Tibetan Buddhist, so one has been working with my mind for 40 years plus in terms of meditation practice. So I'm curious about death.